Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah. Standing there behind the counter, willing to help.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to Books and Beyond. It's just Louisa here today in Karen's seat, so I'm watching the time, and I've got Joe looking at me, our producer, keeping me on track today. But it's a very exciting session we have today because we have a special guest, and our special guest is Kevin Mialamu, former All Black and standout rugby player. For our non-rugby listeners, you may be wondering why we've got a sportsman on the show today. But as well as being an outstanding sportsman and community person, Kevin is also the illustrator of several children's books. So, Kevin, how many books have you illustrated, and tell us how you got into it?
Talofa, Louisa, thank you for having me in studio today.
You're welcome.
Last year was our 10th year being able to put out our books for Starship, and it's been an amazing journey. And so actually for me, it started while I was still playing rugby, and it was a passion of mine actually. Art and graphics is something I did through school, but when I was growing up, my mum and her brothers had a lot of artwork around my grandparents' house when I was growing up, so I'd see a lot of it around my house growing up, but also my grandparents. And so probably for me, the inspiration probably was spurred by what my mum would do with her art. And she was really good at what she did. And all my uncles had their art portfolios up from high school up around my grandparents' house.
Wow. So some families have books and your family had artwork around home.
Yeah, so and I think just being immersed with so much of it around the place, and a few of my uncles not only painted and sketched, but also did a bit of carving as well. So it was, it was something that was a big part of my life. And, for me to get the opportunity to, I loved art and graphics, but I never thought I'd have a chance to have some artwork in a book that's out in the public. So it is a real honour, and I think the real purpose of it as well is to be able to create some money for Starship as well. So it's a real win-win situation.
Yeah, it's a lovely story, and it's like a tribute to all those artists in your family, isn't it, that you're able to do this and have your artwork out there for all to see, and perhaps maybe an exhibition, a Mialamu family exhibition one day. I'm sure Auckland Libraries will be happy to host it.
I always think as well, I think you can always be your harshest critic as well. And so it is really hard. Like, I know for me, when I look at my work, I know my, I had some friends at school, they were really good artists, and my aunties and uncles and my mum were good artists. And I always feel really self-conscious putting my work out there, just thinking what people might think about it. But it's always a really good feeling once it's done and completed. But, for a lot of the illustrations, it takes a long while. And my kids have always been my sounding board where, if they like it, it stays up on the bench. And if it's not, then it's in the bin right next to it. So it's great to get some good live feedback from them as well.
Yes, well, good. They're in that privileged situation of contributing to Dad's books as well. So what do you do with the originals, of the artwork? I mean, they look great in the books, interweave with the story, but is there a special place around home where you store your originals? I mean, what happens to them?
I've got a few originals at home, but, for a lot of them, they go into auction at Barford and Thompson as well. It's just another way to for us to be able to help raise some money for Starship as well. So, we've got some really good supporters that come through Barford and Thompson and buy the artwork, which is a good feeling as well. Yep.
Yes, well, one of my favourites is your book, Paul and the Magic Pencil, because I was telling you earlier, I have a son called Paul, and the illustration on the front cover is just so my son, you know, a teenage boy lounging on the sofa with legs over the arms and in his own space, and, you know, and it just sort of depicts my son when he was a teenager so well. So I really do enjoy your artwork, and you know, whoever's got that original is a very lucky person, because it's very cool. Any other books in the pipeline for Starship? I mean, how many books have you done altogether now?
Last year was the 10th year, and so that's 10 books for us, and it's been an amazing journey. You know, the first time we opened up the competition for the Barford and Thompson Young Authors Challenge, it started with probably about 100, maybe just over 100 entries. And, you know, last year in our 10th year, we were up to 1,000. So it's grown amazingly. And isn't it such an amazing thing for our young students? Because I think it goes from year 6 through to year 8. And isn't it amazing when you're of that age and you can say, yes, I've got a story of mine out there that's in a published book. So it's quite an amazing achievement for our young authors.
Ah, yes, I would be rapt if I was a child having my story published. So you know, I also work in one of Auckland's community libraries, and I know for a fact that teachers, parents approach us all the time and say, you know, with an interest in having their children's work published, and how would they go about it, you know, and some of them you know, are illustrators themselves. The parents or you know, they want their children's work published, and a lot of teachers it's their dream to have their classrooms' works published. So what is the process? How does someone go about having their story published in a Starship book and illustrated by Kevin Mialamu?
Well, you know, over the last, since the competition's been around, it was pretty much a competition that we've run and the entries come from Pukekohe all the way to the top of the North Island. And being able to put a story together that, you know, we understand that with our kids as well. It doesn't have to have so much structure behind it, but we always try and push for it to have some meaning behind it, you know, some value that if someone was reading it, they might be able to take something out of the story. So that was one of the things that we always pick up on, and I must say it's a really hard thing to do when we have to narrow it down to 5 or 6 stories when there's so many good stories, you know.
That would be so hard. I would not want to be on that panel.
But it's amazing the quality that we get through, and so our young authors they're very thoughtful when they're writing their stories, and they're lucky enough as well to get a chance to sit down with a couple of authors. I've been lucky to work with John Parker right from the beginning, and he just helps him, you know, if there's any parts in the story that they might need to work on, they get a chance to do a workshop with him for the day, which is a good opportunity for them and for them to further their skills. And also,
and do you attend the workshops with them, at what point does the illustrator come into the picture?
Well, you know, in the first 5 or 6 years, I think I was the sole illustrator, and as my rugby commitments, you know, got a little bit more strenuous.
Yeah, as you were winning World Cups for us,
we were really lucky to get some amazing illustrators on, or artists along on the journey as well, and so. Man, I had to lift my game.
But, a bit of competition there.
Yes. But, you know, for us it was at the beginning of the workshop, just being able to sit down with our children and get a few ideas around what some of the characters might look like, or what they think some of the illustrations might have in them. So being able to have a good connection with them and get to know them so that when you're putting it together, you know, it's going to be something that they'll feel proud about or feel connected to as well.
Yeah, I guess it does help with the images when you've had those conversations.
Yes.
Yeah, so So, listeners, we've got a bit of a treat here today with Kevin's brought along one of his books that he's illustrated. And we have, and also in celebration of March being Pacifica, and as we Pacifica people like to tell stories. So we thought we'd have Kevin, would ask Kevin to read one of the stories from one of his books that he's featured in today. And what have you chosen for us today, Kevin?
From one of our books, it's from one of our winners, and it's called Home Sweet Home. And it was written by Josephine Sim. And I got a good chance to sit down with her, and we spent a bit of time going over what some of the characters might look like. So she was pretty happy with the end product, and that always makes me feel good, you know, that she wasn't turning around looking at it going, oh, that wasn't what I thought it was going to look like, you know. So
yeah,
it was nice that we got some sort of alignment, or we were thinking along the same lines that I could pull off some illustrations that look like what she had in her mind.
That's great. So when you're ready, we shall start our story time on Books and Beyond.
Awesome. And to all our listeners, you know, the first time I actually read a few stories out was at Starship, and I just started sweating because when I looked out and saw the audience I was reading to, there must have been 100 kids and parents. And so sometimes when you're reading to kids, it's okay. And when you see a few parents, oof, the pressure went on. So
that's really interesting, because this is a man who's played in front rugby in stadiums packed with, 80,000 people at a time, and no problem. An audience of children, and oh dear.
Yes.
Okay.
But I'll give it a crack. Okay.
The floor is yours.
All right. So the story is called Home Sweet Home. In the ancient times, all the turtles were shell-less. They could move quite fast, especially Toby, one of the youngest, bravest turtles. The turtles lived a carefree life and didn't even bother to build a house. Instead, they nested down in caves, beside bushes, under trees, and even slept floating on a river. One bright early morning, Toby woke up with a start. A loud, high-pitched scream frightened him, sending shivers down the back of his spine. He crept next door to his sister's cave and peeked over. He got such a shock that he stood as still as a statue, panic-stricken with what he saw. In his view was an eagle having a fierce battle with his frightened sister. Fortunately, Toby was brave enough to grip some pebbles and aim them at the unexpected eagle. The eagle gave a furious screech, and having to forego its breakfast and unwillingly fly away. Every time a bale of eagles went somewhere, a predator from the sky would dive down and whoosh. In a blink of an eye, a turtle would be snatched away forever. How sad. The turtle thought that the sea was a nice place to hide from their predators, but when they moved into the water, they nearly got eaten by a shark. When they relaxed on the river, an alligator chased them until they were puffing exhaustively. If they lived under trees, monkeys would throw them around like balls, do something mischievous. It seemed like there were no place at all to hide from their predators. The turtles felt hopeless and miserable. They decided to search for a better shelter for their home. The next morning, Toby and the others discussed a way to survive. "Now, does anybody have a plan for how to escape from predators?" Toby's dad asked. "I know," came a croaky voice from Toby's grandfather. "Maybe we could carry our houses as shells on our backs. That way we can hide in our house whenever we meet a predator." There came an uproar from the excited crowd. They all thought that Toby's grandfather had the most excellent plot. The turtles set off promptly to work at building a shell for themselves. Some turtles tried to use leftover food scraps to build a shell. Another used flax to weave through, and a third plucked some grass off to start with. Guess what happened to their shells? You're right, they were too light, so they came loose, and in no time at all, changed shape. Others mostly used sticks and branches and leaves, but it was Toby, though, that thought of an amazing idea to build a shell with some special ceramic stones. Toby's shell fitted him perfectly, and on his back it allowed him to tuck inside to rest. The stone shell was strong, however, it was a little heavier than Toby had thought. The price to pay to use this shell was that we would have to move slower. Everyone followed Toby, first starting off to find some ceramic stones. However, they decorated their shells with their own patterns. Now they can travel and plod everywhere they want to. After many generations, the turtles don't need to build a shell for themselves anymore. Instead, they are born with their own unique shell as their home. Every time a turtle curls up in its comfortable protective home, they remember the story of Toby, their collective ancestors who built the same shell. They are filled with gratitude, saying, definitely, there's no place like home.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kevin, for sharing that with us today. I guess it's not every day that an All Black gets to read a bedtime story to us listeners. So there you go. That was a treat.
Sorry for the few stumbles in there. No,
as parents, that's what happens when we read to our children, isn't it? So it's perfectly natural. And when I've done story time and rhyme time at the library, you know, I mean, the children are so forgiving when you sort of, you know, stumble on a few words and miss a few sentences. It's the storytelling that they're there for. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Louisa.
And the story of Toby just took me back to stories that my brother used to send me when he lived in Manaki in the Cook Islands. And we would have stories about my nephew Wade and his pet turtle. And we'd have updates, you know, about Wade and his pet turtle, how big the turtle was. And, you know, that was the news that we used to receive out of Manaki, not how other events going on in their lives are going. We just always heard about the turtles. So that really took me back to those stories from home from there. So, that was such a treat. Thank you so much. It made me think, actually. You played hooker for all your life in your rugby career. Were you always a hooker?
I've always played in the forwards.
That's a rugby position for non-rugby listeners.
Yes. it's usually the bigger guys, but I'm one of the smaller of the bigger guys. But I started out on the edge of the scrum. And I had a good friend now, and he was a teacher back at school, and he said, Kev, you're going to need to change positions if you want to move any further. And so when he was talking about changing positions, I thought he meant go to the other side of the scrum. And so when he said, you know, you're going to actually have to go inside the scrum and play hooker, I was like, oh, I'm not too sure about that, because most of those guys have got funny-looking ears, and I'd never been in a scrum before, and so...
The engine room, I think they call it, don't
they? Call it the engine room, yes. And after getting a chance to play there for most of my career, I understand why they call it that place. So, I've got no regrets. The switch for me was amazing, but to start with, it was something I actually sort of pushed back a little bit, because it was a new skill set for me to learn, but... I had some really good mentors as I was coming through, especially in the professional scene, and so I was lucky to be mentored by some great rugby players and pick up as much as I could from each one of them.
Yeah, well, New Zealand rugby were fortunate out of that switch because you played how many games for the All Blacks altogether?
I think it was 132.
Wow!
I've been very blessed and. An awesome opportunity for me to represent my country, but I got to make some really good friends, lifelong friends, and along that journey, and some of these experiences that we're able to go through, good and bad, will be things that will be a big part of my life and my family's life as well for the rest of it.
Yeah, well, that's true. We all love winning teams, don't we? You know, and that bad, you know, side. I imagine, you know, not winning is that, or injuries. But I was thinking about because my husband, when he played rugby, was also a hooker, and I was thinking about what is it with the hooking position and literature? Because then I recall there was another All Black hooker once, Anton Oliver, wasn't it?
Yes,
he was also. Also into poetry and the arts. I don't know if you ever toured with him, but I recall that he was quite well known for his life outside of rugby, and which made me think of the line, you know, the books between the bookends with the hooker in the front row, with the props on either side. So we'll call them the bookends, and perhaps the hooker is the book, you know, with that association with two All Black hookers being into literature. But it makes me think also about you spend a lot of time together. You're touring, and there must be a bit of downtime when you're not training and playing. So is there, you know, time to read books? I mean, what is there anything that you've read over the years that was memorable, or that you guys used to sort of, what was top pick book read with the All Blacks on tour? Hopefully there was a book along the way.
Yes, you know, those books start becoming digital because you've only got so much space to fit into a suitcase, which is great, being able to have it on your tablet or on your phone. But, you know, with a lot of the boys writing their own books, you know, having their own biographies, a lot of the guys are quite interested to see if they're in it or if
the top picks was each other's biographies.
Yeah, well, there's some interesting stories in all the boys and all of the stories that they share. But, you know, for me, if I think back to one of the first books I had read, it was Michael Jones' book, his book, and I think it was called
Iceman. Oh, really? I've got a story about that, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I'm one of the contributors to a photo.
Is that right?
In there, yeah. The Olale Touch team used to go to Whakatane every year, and my husband was in the team, and I took a photo of them after one of the games. They after each game they put on their lava lavas, or parus as we call them in the Cooks, and so there's this photo that I took of after one of the games of them all in their parus. And so Michael asked me one day if he could have a copy of the photo, and I thought, oh, well, he must like my photo, yeah, I'll give it to him, and then, da-da, it's in the book.
I still remember, actually, when it first came out, and we went to get the book for my dad's for my dad's birthday, and I was lucky enough to get it signed by Michael, and, you know, he was a hero of mine, and got it signed while I was still living in Tokoro. And was lucky enough, in my first year playing for Auckland, I was playing alongside the man. So,
oh, wow.
You can imagine how it was going to training every day and all. It's quite hard to train and put your mind to it when you're training next to one of your heroes, you know. So every day, you know, every day that I was lucky enough to be trained as a rugby player was always special. But in my first year playing for Auckland was even more special because I was playing alongside a lifetime hero for me. So
yeah, those greats. Yeah, so isn't that that's amazing, because you yourself now are that idol for so many young players, girls and boys, playing rugby these days. And you are that, you've become that idol to them. So there you go, that's the cycle of life, I guess. It is. I wanted to ask, while you were talking about biographies with your rugby colleagues, I thought, wow, this is a good opportunity to sort of, yes, most retired sports people do write a biography eventually. Is that something that can we expect from Kevin Mialamo, or are you just too busy still?
It's something my good friend and manager Tim Castle talks about all the time. He's like, Kev, you need to start putting your stories down so we can put it into something we can share with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, just the time-wise, there's so many things going on at the moment. So, you know, I always think if I want to do something really well, I'm going to have to commit the time to it. So I don't want to do it half-heartedly. You know, if I get a chance to do it, I'd like to do it really well. But at the moment, there's so many things going on, with work and family time, and my kids are in college as well. So,
yeah.
Very time poor.
Still
at the
living
moment.
The life.
Oh yes, and I feel very blessed that my family are happy, they're healthy, and I get to catch up with my parents and my brothers and sisters. So it's a good busy.
Yeah,
and I love it.
You do a lot of work in the community, don't you? For still, as you're not playing rugby still, but I think you're still out there busy with the community, representing various organisations as well as New Zealand Rugby, isn't it? So that's very time consuming. Any plans to perhaps do your own book beyond a biography? I was looking at your pictures, thinking graphic novels or something like that for the youth of the world today.
Quite possibly.
Anything interesting like that, so that you can reveal to our listeners today?
Quite possibly. You know, when I think about books when I was growing up, some people, they're probably not considered books, but look, one of the things that really, books that I like looking through were comics, and it was just because the stories are good, but also I'm a visual person as well, so probably means my imagination isn't as good as what some people's imaginations are, but to be able to have the story and be able to see it at the same time, well, me growing up, and I had some friends that had good collections as well. Comics were awesome, so all the superhero comics were great.
Yeah, they're still very popular, aren't
they? Still very popular today, so...
Oh, cool. Yep. What? Well, we'll watch this space.
Yes.
Well, Kevin Mialamu, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your stories and reading to us today. It's been an honour, and I hope you can come back and visit us again. So we didn't do our musical interlude today because we were so engrossed in your story, but you did bring a favourite song along for us. You've picked You Will Know by Black Men United. Why this song today?
Oh, it was a song I listened to while I was in college, and for me, it just always felt like it had a good message behind it and quite uplifting as well. And so it's probably a little bit old for the for some of our younger listeners today, but
or a little bit young for others.
And but there's some nice messages in there, and good, and a feel good to it as well.
That's cool. So thank you so much, and we will go to Kevin's song now, and we will see you next week on Books and Beyond. Ka kite anō. program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/booksandbeyond.